Are you looking to get better focus from your dog? Well, you're in luck because that's exactly what we're talking about today. I'm Instructor Shannon. Welcome back to the McCann Dogs Podcast. I have so many tips and tricks and games and things that I play to make sure that I have great, great focus from my dogs, whether there are distractions around or whether there are not distractions around. So,
well, what are some of the traits, Shannon, that we all meet different people in life, and some people I pay attention to and some people I don't. What are some of the tips that, like, what makes you want to pay attention to a person?
I think it would depend on whether that person is me or whether that person is someone else.
Right.
Because
right.
If that person is me, then you want to pay attention.
That's true. I do pay attention
to weird tap dance.
I do.
If all of a sudden,
yes,
out of the blue.
Yes. Yes. You're unpredictable. That's one of the things with dogs we can use is being unpredictable.
That's a really good question. And there's so many things that would go into that, right? And it might even depend on what else there is to focus on in that moment.
Yep.
You know, if I'm in the room with you and I think you're one of the most interesting people in the world, as you know, but if Billy Joel's up on stage or Elton John's up on stage playing the piano, I might have great focus for you 99% of the time, but that's a big distraction for
me. That is a big distraction. Yes. Yes.
I'm going to have a really hard time paying attention to you. So that's always a relative question. And you know what? I think that's true of our dogs too.
Right. Exactly. Right? Exactly.
There's so many different things that we need to consider. You know, how old is this dog, first of all? Mm-hmm. How much training has this dog had next?
Yeah. And what is the environment you're in?
Exactly. What is that environment? Has the dog had a chance to work up to that environment with focus? Or is this all of a sudden, you know, I went from a boring white room to Disney World.
Right.
And we're on the roller coaster and now everything's exciting.
Right, yes.
There's a great analogy out there that I use all the time. And I wish I could take credit for this. I have no idea where it originated. But basically, it's just the idea of learning calculus on a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. You know, if you put that in perspective, this is a lot of the times what people are asking for from their dogs when they're looking for better focus in a distracting environment. Mm-hmm. They're asking their dogs to basically do the equivalent of learning calculus on a roller coaster.
Exactly.
And that, I think, really hits home for people because it's so obvious when I think about that situation, right? When I think about waiting in line at Canada's way back when I was younger, unfortunately, I don't do roller coasters well anymore.
Oh, Shannon.
They make me feel nauseous now.
We should have a group.
It just happens when you get old. I loved them as a
youngin. A group trip to Canada's Wonderland. Yeah. We'll let everyone know when we're going and we'll all meet up.
Can you imagine?
That would be fun.
The McCann dog trainers at Canada's Wonderland having a party.
Yes.
We'd all miss our dogs too much though.
We would. Well, you can bring your dogs there. Well, last time I went to Canada's Wonderland was many years ago, and they had a kennel area.
I brought
my own crates, but they did have some like vet type kennels.
Okay.
And I gave the boy that was the 16-year-old boy who was looking after the dogs. I said, "Do not touch my dogs. I will come in to let them out."
Perfect.
And I came a couple of times and let them out. Had lunch with them, and I had a great entire day at Canada's Wonderland, and my dogs were safely in their air conditioned kennel area.
What a super idea on the part of Canada's Wonderland to do that. Because a lot of the times I'm sure people are like, "Oh, we can't go because it's a full day activity."
Right.
I mean, you're not going to pay the prices that you have to pay to get in there and only spend a couple of hours there. Maybe if you have a season pass, you can do that. Mm-hmm. But if you are going for your, you know, one or two trips of the summer, you're making a whole day of it. So having the dog at home means that you can't stay that long, which makes the idea of going to Canada's Wonderland less appealing because of the expense.
Right.
And now here we are back at the beginning again. Look at how I just summed that up.
You did. Yes. And I was focused the whole time, Shannon.
You were so well focused. Mm-hmm. That's great. Good job on that. I hope Canada's Wonderland's still offering that.
Yes. You'd have, call them to see if they still have that. But
and whatever you do, if you do bring your dog to Canada's Wonderland, don't try teaching them calculus when you're headed on the roller coaster.
No. And actually, I'll be impressed if you know calculus too.
I do not. Oh my goodness. I did take a little bit of calculus in college, but I remember being confused by it then, even with fresh math skills from high school. So, I wouldn't have a clue now.
Even another thing I just thought about, I often talk about my son because I'm very proud of him. My son is a marine engineer and he's graduating from a 4-year program with the Canadian Coast Guard this June. And
Good job, Ty.
He has learned how to run the great big engines that run these icebreakers in a simulation area.
Okay.
They don't teach them it out on the water.
That makes perfect
sense.
Where
there's big waves and things happening. Yeah. They teach them in a controlled environment. This is what you do when this happens. This is what you do when this happens. Same with the people in the navigation stream. They have a great big simulator and it simulates different harbors. And they learn to guide the simulator ship in. They don't learn to do it out there where there's real rocks and real issues and other boats moving around.
This is so smart.
So it, yeah. And then now that he's learned it after 4 years, he'll be out on the ships now doing it after learning on simulators.
Perfect. And that's so smart because you're not in optimal learning when there's all sorts of other things going on, right? So whether it's ourselves or whether it's our dogs, mm-hmm. if there are things that are trying to grab our attention, it's really hard to focus on the learning aspect of things. So I often refer to the white room.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the jumping off point.
Yes.
So I really want to impress upon people, though, that you don't want to stagnate in the white room. And
right,
you do
yes.
not have to have perfection in the white room mm-hmm. before you move out of the white room or mm-hmm. before you start adding color to the white room. So the white room is basically just a non-distracting location, right? It might be my kitchen. It might be my hallway. It might be my basement. You know, it's some place that I'm not having to struggle to fight and get my dog's attention.
Right.
Right. My young puppy in training is in, you know, basically this is the equivalent of putting them in the classroom and sitting them at a desk, mm-hmm. right? With like a setup situation where there's not going to be a bunch of distractions, where there's going to be something interesting to do the learning with, et cetera. So I've got my food, I've got my puppy, and I've got my, you know, I'm in a good mood, I'm ready to train, and everything is set up perfectly for the dog to learn. And this is where I'm starting to teach my skills. Mm-hmm. So if I go out just like Ty, you know, just like Ty being out there on the ship, he's not going to be having to navigate the ship itself and steer clear of all the waves and whatnot while he's learning how to actually drive the ship.
Right.
I mean, when you learn to ride a horse, you usually get put on the old school nag
right.
that is
yes.
just reliable as all get out. If
yes.
you got on a bronco, a bucking bronco
right.
to try to learn how to ride a horse
yep.
for the first time, good luck to you.
Or how would you feel if you get on the airplane and said, the pilot announces, hi, I'm just learning. I'm learning today.
Oh, you know what? I thought you were going to say, if you got on the airplane and the pilot said, we're picking a random person, Shannon, come on up here and fly the plane
yeah, I'm gonna
for
teach
us
you.
Today.
Yeah.
Everybody's lives are in your hands.
Yeah.
Right,
exactly.
I'd be excited, but
right.
I would also be very terrified.
Right. And people forget this. They have guests come over and the dog's jumping all over the guests in a state of excitement and they're yelling off, off. And the dog has no idea what off means and they're, you know, grabbing at the dog and that is not a learning environment.
Yeah.
That's like the dog flying the airplane
exactly.
for the first time.
Oh, the dog's flying now.
I have a dog flying an airplane. Yes, yes.
And the problem, unfortunately, what happens is the dog either learns to completely ignore that word off because it doesn't mean mm-hmm. anything because it just comes and I don't understand what it means, or it actually gets associated with the wrong behaviors.
Yes, yes.
So now...
Like now off means jump.
Yes.
Jump, bark,
exactly.
jump.
Yeah. Because the dogs don't understand. They don't innately know that off means take your front paws and put them
right.
on the ground.
Like how would they know that?
Exactly. We need to teach that.
Yes.
Right? Or keep your front paws on the ground to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
We need to teach these things
right.
to
yes.
our dogs. So, you know, in this case, I'm going to set up in the white room and I am going to teach my dog that off means, you know, jumping off the thing. I'm going to help him understand mm-hmm. that first before I add the complexity of
right.
now an emotional state where my
right.
dog's excited to see a person and wants to greet them. Mm-hmm. And the potential for them to jump up is so huge in that scenario,
right?
Right? So I'm going to reinforce not jumping up on other things. You know, I might set up interesting things.
Right.
I might put a big cookie on the counter, for example. And then I'm going to help my dog be successful
right.
in not jumping up for that mm-hmm. cookie, right? He knows it's there. I'm not going to hide it. I'm going to say, hey, look, I got this big cookie here. I'm going to put it up on the counter. And then I'm going to say to him, sit. And I'm going to give him all the rewards
right,
in
yeah.
the world.
Yeah.
All the cookies.
All the cookies.
Oh,
you get all the cookies.
He's going to get lots of reinforcement for walking towards the counter with me and then off,
right?
Right? So I walk up, I say off, he's not jumping up.
Mm-hmm.
I say yes and reward.
Right.
So he starts to think, okay, what's that off, 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 and I get a cookie, off, and I get a cookie. Like that's creating a good,
right.
good
yes.
association.
Yeah.
Right?
And I like to teach off with a little stool or maybe an old-timey phone book.
An old-timey
phone books.
So this is like, I'm picturing like yellow pages being right. about an inch and a half thick, and then white pages right. being yep. about an inch and a half
If you live in a big
thick,
city, so. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, I guess
yeah,
that's
look at
true,
Hamilton.
Right?
I base everything off the Hamilton old-timey phone book.
Old-timey.
So I'm going to say, I'm going to lure my puppy up and yes and feed them, and then lure my puppy off, yes and feed them.
I love
them.
That idea,
And
too.
Eventually I'm going to stop feeding them for the up because that's I don't want to create value for up. I want to create value for off,
yep.
off. And so my puppy says, I know what off means. It means to get my feet on the floor and I get
yeah,
treats.
Absolutely.
I've pre-taught that to them.
Got it.
So that when they go to jump up on my mom when she visits, I can say off. And the puppy says, I know what that means.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. And I also like to work some of that in too. So I don't like to go right from like the white room scenario and the setup scenario right to, okay, this is real life and, you know, Great Aunt Ida is coming over and go visit Great Aunt Ida, but be careful not to jump. I would bring in people that aren't novel first, right?
Right.
So this is the transition. We talk about the white room, but people often get stuck in the white room so long because they're waiting for perfection.
Right.
Or they're waiting for, I don't know. Sometimes I think people just think that the white room process is so much longer than it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. You know, it's once the dog has a little bit of a basic understanding,
right?
Now we can start to apply this, but we can start to slowly apply it.
Yes.
So now I'm going to bring in my situation, it's me and Kip in my house. I have extended family that don't live with me, but those would be the next people in line because mm-hmm. they're not that novel to my dog.
Right.
But I'm going to start with Kip. I'm going to say, okay, Kip, I just want you to stand there. Mm-hmm. Don't say anything to the puppy. All right.
Right.
And I'm going to do my thing. So I'm going to walk up. I'm going to say off. I might say sit. You know, whatever it is that I want the dog to do in that moment, I'm going to show him now with a situation where, you know, he knows Kip.
Right.
He probably was just hanging out with Kip a minute ago before I started this little lesson with
right.
him. So Kip is not that exciting in this moment, mm-hmm. right? Kip's been around. He's been around.
He's been around. Yeah. He's a weathered man.
He's a So now I'm teaching my puppy that off still means off, even
right.
with this extra element of the person.
Yes.
But of course, if the person was novel, if the person was exciting, that's
right.
I always call it the distraction ladder, right?
Yes.
So the bottom rung of the ladder is the white room.
Mm-hmm.
And then that next rung is my step with Kip, where, you know,
right.
now I'm doing this work, walking mm-hmm. up to Kip, saying off, rewarding the puppy for not jumping up, getting in lots of
yep.
rewards and then moving away, repeating, et cetera, et cetera. That's rung two. If I were to jump right from the bottom rung to a stranger out on the street, I'm probably at rung eight with
right.
a stranger out
yes.
on the street, right? And
yes.
I haven't done the steps in between.
Right.
So now I've done it with Kip. I've done it several times
mm-hmm.
with Kip. Now I might, you know, enlist my extended family,
right.
my sister
mm-hmm.
and those people and the people that
mm-hmm.
are going to be a big part of the
right.
puppy's life. Now I'm going to work it with them. And again, in a situation where it's really not that novel. If my puppy is just arriving with me at their house
mm-hmm.
and he's excited to see them, that's the situation where I'm going to have him up in arms because
right.
he doesn't know enough yet
exactly.
to make the right
and,
choice.
And another thing, too, is often we allow our guests to come over and go insane with the puppy.
Yeah.
It's like, puppy! And you ruffle its head
it's
and you dive
to.
All around. And now the puppy has an expectation. People come in the house, puppy center of attention, and people roughhouse with the puppy.
Yeah.
And then, and now we're trying to teach the puppy off. But what it learned first was that people come and have a party with the puppy.
Yep. And I lose my mind.
Right. So yeah. I never allow that. When
no,
I have
I
a brand
either.
New puppy, please ignore my puppy.
Yeah.
I want my puppy to have no expectations. And it's going to make it so much easier
yeah.
for my puppy to behave. People create their own issues often
Absolutely.
By allowing too much puppy parties at 10 weeks.
Yeah.
And then at 6 months going, why is my puppy trying to party with everyone that comes in?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of the times this is like a couple of minutes and then the puppy kind of settles in and forgets that these novel people just came in or that you just went to the novel people. And then you have a little bit less energy. You might be able to work with that at that point. So
right.
it might just be relaxing for 5 minutes with the puppy and then, okay, now we're a little bit calmer. Now I can bring you up in arms to say hello. And then we can go about our,
mm-hmm.
our training with the off,
right.
with the off work. And then from there, I'm going to find a way to make that slightly more difficult
mm-hmm.
and slightly more difficult until we're at the point where it's the stranger on the street and my puppy has mastered this thing
right.
because they've done several repetitions and they've had several success points and it makes sense to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
I'm not just putting them in the situation and then hoping that they arbitrarily understand this word off.
Right.
So that's not going to work out very well for me. I know we started by saying we're going to get better focus.
I know. I think we have
I don't think we have.
No.
I don't think we have.
No, because
we're still geniuses here. Yes. And I'll explain why.
Well, we know we're geniuses. We know we're geniuses.
I started laughing because I was like, oh, she didn't react to that.
I know.
I was expecting a reaction.
So I was thinking. I was deep in Christine thought.
This is the way to get better focus.
Right.
Because if you start with the scenario we presented as the wrong scenario first, with the puppy jumping all over the person and you saying off, 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 off.
Right.
There's no way you're going to get focus from your dog. There's no way. Mm-hmm. You know, you've already started them off where they're way over threshold, which basically just means that they're too excited.
Right.
You know, they're overstimulated. Mm-hmm. They're in that chaotic toddler state where the toddler's running around the open concept island house.
Right.
You know, like that's how the puppy's feeling. They're adrenalized, they're pumped, and they don't really have emotional control yet. So they're just in this fly off the wall state.
It's like when I get to Myrtle Beach, which is my favorite vacation spot, I love to get to the beach and just go running into the waves.
Exactly.
And
perfect.
It would take a lot of emotional control for me not to just rush into the waves.
Oh, I bet.
Because that's so much fun. If someone got me on the beach and said, no, Christine, you can't go in the water, it'd be like, oh, like, yeah.
Yeah. That would be awful.
It would be
awful.
You would
push them away and run into the water.
I would
regardless.
Not vacation with them anymore.
And then the acid rain would eat you. And they'd be like, I told you, you couldn't go in the water.
It's Myrtle Beach. It's perfect.
I'm melting. Yeah. This scenario just played out. You heard it here.
That's it. I'm not going on vacations with Shannon.
Okay. So seriously, like this really is the way you need to go about teaching any skills.
Right.
So whether it's attention, whether it's jumping up, whether it's walking on leash, whether it stays, it doesn't matter what the skill is.
Right.
You know, you need to start with a little bit of a formula and you need to start in a scenario where the dog can focus.
Yes.
And can learn, because if they're already overfaced, it's going to be really hard for them to learn.
Right.
And that's not to say that you can't get to the point where they listen regardless of the distraction. You know, maybe at some point after doing enough calculus, you could actually function and perform calculus on the roller coaster. I'm never going to be able to test that theory just because of my lack of calculus knowledge. So we'd have to find some other analogy and then see if I can go and do it on a roller coaster. But that's the thing.
How about in a haunted house? Could you do it in a haunted house with a lot of jump scares?
If there's clowns, no. Maybe the jump scares I might be able to. I don't know. Let's try that. Let's try that.
Yeah, because that's something we can do. Remember we went to a wax museum in Niagara Falls. Oh, yeah, remember? And we ordered the scariest experience because it had live actors.
And I think they delivered. I remember it being
that was
scary.
Yeah. That, we all remember there was a train. There was four of us. And you were hanging on to Kip. And I was hanging on to you. And then my partner was hanging on to the back of me. And we're all like in this little sandwich moving together.
I know. I think I probably made Kip go first because I like to be in the middle, right? You don't want to be the first person.
The last person's the one who disappears.
You want to be safe in
Remember,
the middle.
Yeah. If you're on a walk in the woods and you turn around, the last person's gone. It's like,
where did they go?
Yep.
Now I'm the last person.
Marie, get up to the front.
You want to walk behind me? You know what? Maybe. I don't know. It'd probably be pretty hard.
It would be.
That scared adrenaline is a little different entirely. But yeah, I mean, I think it's so important. So important that we start with that optimal learning state.
Right.
You know, we're not trying to teach kids math on a roller coaster. We're putting them in the classroom. Mm-hmm. We're sitting them at desks. You know, we're giving them the best chance to focus in. We're giving them a dedicated teacher to tell them exactly what they need to learn. It's the same with our dogs.
Right. Yep.
And that's the part that's missing too when we just throw our dogs into the fray and hope for the best is that dedicated teacher element.
Right. Yes.
So in terms of learning, like the dog's already way behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So the way you set up learning is definitely going to lend more ability for them to focus.
Yes, for
or
sure.
Or less, depending on how you set it up. So, so important. I think it's also, I know we just talked quite a bit about teaching and training, but I think it's also really crucial to point out as its own entity that training itself is the thing that's going to get you better focus. You can't just cross your fingers and hope that you have that dog that naturally focuses. I've never had that dog. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had lots of dogs, and right. I've never had a dog who has natural tendency to focus despite distractions. Right. I've had some dogs who want to engage mm-hmm. with me. You know, I was talking about Tyler on the last episode. That dog was mine from 4 weeks of age. There was mm-hmm. no doubt he adored me, and I was madly in love with him. Like, it was a match made in heaven. But even he didn't have, like, a natural focus mm-hmm. when there was distractions around. Like, if we'd been field training,
right,
and there's ducks flying around out in the field, you know, he would be madly focused on that.
How about if he went to a bunny farm?
I'm going to guess he'd probably be pretty excited about the bunnies mm-hmm. as a puppy.
Right.
As an adult, I would have welcomed that distraction.
The bunny farm?
Yeah. So that's the thing about us dog trainers is we're always looking for the tougher and tougher distraction.
Right, yes.
Oh, there's chickens next door at the McCann right. dog's property. Let's go heel next to the chickens. You know, yes. Let's go practice response to name away from the chickens.
Yeah. Or around here, there's tons of Canada geese.
Yes.
And they leave their
leavings.
Droppings everywhere. And
they're like a small child dropping.
They're disgusting.
Huge.
They really wreck our parks.
Yeah, they're huge.
But they're a good distraction for yes. dogs. So they're good to practice. And I yeah. never want my dog to eat one. So I am right on my top of my dog training game when yeah. they're around.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, and that's the distraction ladder, right? That's the top of the distraction ladder
yep.
where I want my dog to be able to respond to me regardless of what's going on in the environment. And people always want to have that exact thing. You just have to find the right setups
yep.
so that you can train and train yep. and train and build value and build understanding and let the dogs know that, you know, it's not optional in a lot of cases. Like my recall, for example, mm-hmm. it's not optional. There's
right.
no
yes.
option
oh,
here.
I
you
have,
absolutely have to come.
I have a funny story
okay.
about a recall. I might have told you before. So Gavin was he was a Blue Merle, Cardigan Welsh Corgi. He was a good little dog. Early in our training, I took him to a park which had tons and tons of trees, and there was like an old cemetery near it.
Okay.
And I thought, I'm going to let him off his leash. And this is back Christine in her 20s when she did lots of goofy dog training.
It was a very different Christine
yes,
than Christine
yes.
now in her, you know,
in
late
her 50s.
20s.
In my late
20s.
Oh, yes. 20s. Yes. So Gavin's running around, and, you know, I think I, you know, was maybe tossing a ball for him and doing, you know, interacting with him, when all of a sudden a squirrel pops out from behind a tree and Gavin starts to chase it. And I thought, no big deal. The squirrel's going to go up a tree. No, the squirrel decided that it was going to sprint like 2 miles across the field and go under somebody's fence into someone's yard.
Uh-oh.
And when I realized this was happening, I thought, okay, I'll just call Gavin back. But Gavin was in hot pursuit.
Oh, dear.
And under the fence he went into someone's backyard. And I have no idea what's in that person's backyard other than Gavin and a squirrel. There
yeah.
could be another dog. There could be, who knows? Who knows? And I couldn't access it.
Oh, no.
So I had to run terrified. I had to run around the block. And luckily it was one of the first houses. And try their gate, and sure enough, their gate was open. And there's Honda in their yard. Or not
Gavin.
Honda, sorry, Gavin. And I remember being like, oh my gosh. Like, so, you know, like that something horrible could have happened. Yeah. Got him out of the yard, put him in the car, drove home, got a long line out, drove immediately back to that park
there
and said,
go.
We are doing some training.
Yeah.
Gavin went on his line, and we did... Come pops, lots of praise, lots of rewards. And then the next day we did the same thing.
Perfect.
And then the next day we did the same thing. And we must have done that for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then the next time, finally about 2 weeks later, I started dropping his line. He was being reliable. And you know what? I trained right through that situation, and Gavin never chased another, well, he chased a squirrel, but I could call him off them after that
yeah.
because I put the work and time in.
Yeah.
I just didn't expect him to know to come when there's a squirrel. So I put copious amounts of work in and I got results.
Yeah. And hey, Swanee.
Yeah.
You just hit on a genius way to get better focus. And that is to say, okay, we had a problem.
Yep.
I'm going to fix it.
Right. Exactly.
You know? A lot of the times it's like, I think this is one of the things that differentiate your average pet person from a dog trainer. Mm-hmm. We know that incident over there is only going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger if we don't deal with it.
Right.
Whereas I think a lot of the times the average pet person just thinks, okay, that, you know, that one incident, Or maybe now they think, oh, my dog doesn't come when they're called because they're a little disconnected right. from the training mm-hmm. process, perhaps, and they just keep the dog on leash now forever because they're terrified of the same thing happening right. again. And, you know, neither of those answers is right.
Right.
Right? What we need to do is now we need to say, okay, honest assessment, you know? I just realized there's a hole in my recall
right,
training.
Yep, I haven't put the work in. Yes.
Yeah. So going home, getting the long line, and now making sure that this lesson that is probably the most important lesson mm-hmm. that there ever could be for dog ownership
yep.
is so important to get back on the field here and right. to say, you must come when you're called each and every time mm-hmm. I call you. And this is not just about, you know, giving the dog crap.
Right.
This is not about going out there and
oh, yeah,
saying,
I wasn't.
You're a bad dog. You
exactly,
must come
no,
when you're called.
I wasn't. I wasn't angry. I was angry at myself.
Yeah.
But I wasn't angry at Gavin because he was innocent. He truly didn't know how to yeah, come in absolutely. That situation. So when we came back to train, we were firm and yes. businesslike. Yeah. But I was also fun when I did my come pop exactly. and he turned, woohoo, party time. Yeah. I made myself so much fun that I was far more fun than a squirrel.
Exactly. So the message was, you must come when you're called. And again, there's no apology here.
Right.
You must mm-hmm. come when you're called. This is your life, potentially. This is saving your life, potentially. Right. There's no apology. You must come when you're called. And when you do, the sky rains. All the
rains
good things
fun.
In the
yes.
world, right?
Yes.
And this is what we do to help our dogs understand mm-hmm. and become reliable in training as we right. build a ton of value. Mm-hmm. And we also have a component of you must.
Yep.
And with those things together, we end up with reliability with right. our dogs. And mm-hmm. then that ends up translating into a dog that has a wonderful free life right. where we can let them explore at the park
right.
and we can be confident yep. that we're going to be able to call them back. Are you looking for good quality training equipment to help reinforce your training efforts to get better focus with your dog? Check out McCannDogs.store for our purpose-built, fabulous, long-lasting dog training equipment that is going to make your job training your dog much easier. I actually had a funny squirrel story the other day just on my property.
Right.
Just coming back up towards the house. I was walking back up towards the house with Ned and a squirrel went running up the tree. He saw it and he went running to the base of the tree. Yeah. And I laughed because, of course, the squirrel is up at the top of the tree going.
Oh, and it's funny when they do that.
Yeah.
And I said, they're so sassy.
I said, oh, Ned, that squirrel's angry with you. And then I kind of giggled a little bit and I kept walking towards the house because I thought, you know, the squirrel's in the tree now and Ned's not. He's not going to like lunge and bark at the squirrel in the tree. He's just intense at the bottom mm-hmm. of the tree, but he's like looking and dancing around. He's not obnoxious about it. So I don't worry too much about it. And he has a great recall off critters because we have worked very hard on that. So I was like, the squirrel's not going to come down from the tree. He's going to wait until Ned goes away. Well, guess what? The squirrel decided to make a run for it. So I was like, oh, is he going? Is he coming down the tree? He actually went around the back of the tree where Ned couldn't see him, ran down about halfway. And I thought this was really cool on an instinctual level for the squirrel because Ned, of course, was still over here looking at the tree. And the squirrel went behind the tree, ran down, and then leapt out. So it leapt out about 6 feet from the tree. So Ned didn't even see that it wasn't still in the tree until it hit the ground over here. And then, of course, he caught eye on it and went to chase it. And I just called him and he came off, which was great and expected. And, you know, life is wonderful. Right. But I thought, like, that was a really clever moment.
Right.
And when I lived on Alice Street and I had a fence, I used to sit on the deck a lot and I would watch the squirrels run along the fence line. And when the dogs saw them, the squirrels would freeze.
Right.
And then the dogs would kind of be like, oh, I thought there was a critter there.
Right.
And it was obvious they couldn't necessarily pick the critter out.
Yeah.
And then they'd get distracted. And as soon as the dog wasn't paying attention to the squirrel anymore, the squirrel would start running again. And I was like, they're so clever.
Right. They are.
They're such clever little critters.
But one thing that's funny for people who are listening, in Southern Ontario, there are squirrels everywhere. Yeah. I moved out to New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, and I barely saw a squirrel. So if you're out there going, what are they talking about? Just like, you basically, you see a squirrel like every 30 seconds in Southern Ontario.
Yeah.
If anyone lives near Hamilton and they want to practice with squirrels, go to Gage Park. Gage Park is chock full of squirrels. It's right downtown in Hamilton. Not right downtown. It's off to the east of downtown. And it's a beautiful park to walk in. And there's a beautiful fountain and beautiful gardens and flowers. So it's worth the trip to go and walk there. And you can really practice your dog training because there is squirrels aplenty.
So we have this in our suburban areas. You can be walking down the street and you can see 800 squirrels in a walk if you want to.
Yeah.
We have online training, which is worldwide, and we have many students in Australia. And one of our members-only students, which our members-only is a higher learning program that people take after they've graduated our life skills program, and we teach all sorts of really neat things in there. We work on higher learning concepts. We work on making sure that we perfect that distraction ladder. We work on making sure that listening skills are on point and perfection. I mean, it really is. It's such a great program. But anyways, I digress from my point. My point is that some of our Australian students, one of them in particular, Catriona, will often post videos where she's working with her cattle dog, Archie. And Archie's a great dog. Mm-hmm. And he'll be healing along beside her. And then you'll see the camera pan. And there's a kangaroo. They're in the middle of suburbia.
Right, yeah.
There's houses everywhere. And there's a kangaroo, boing, boing, boing. Or there's a kangaroo just stock still staring at them. And I'm like, this is just so, like, they're almost like a mythical creature
in my head.
Because I would only ever see one at the zoo.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And see, like, the camera pans and here's three kangaroos hopping down the street beside Archie, and Archie's being such a good boy because Catriona has done the work.
Right, yeah.
You know, she's done the work to make sure that Archie can focus despite those kangaroos. I love it. But now, it's
if you and I went to Australia, we'd have to work with our dogs a bit.
Well, you'd have to work with me too.
And us, yeah, because I'd be afraid. I'd be afraid, I think. But our dogs would go, well, what's that thing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're proofed on squirrels, but that doesn't mean they're proofed on kangaroos. Yeah. And I would worry that the kangaroo would pick up Honda, put him in his pouch, and hop away with him.
Bye bye, Honda. Oh my gosh. Seriously,
that would be awful.
It would be awful, but that is like a really cute mental image.
It is.
Honda's head sticking out of a kangaroo pouch.
And Honda would probably love it. Like, this is awesome.
They probably would. Oh my gosh. That's so hilarious.
Yes. And we have another student was in Arizona, and they had roadrunners.
Oh, yeah. See, this is just,
yeah, so everyone has their own.
How big are roadrunners?
From the picture, they looked like they were like a little bit smaller than seagulls.
Okay.
But then our seagulls. Like, I know when I was out east, like, the seagulls were monsters. Like, there are some big seagulls on the ocean. Like, our seagulls, our little lake seagulls are.
They're just not quite the same.
Yeah, like, maybe the size of pigeons, but skinnier. I don't know.
Interesting. I was just thinking, like, every time I see the killdeer, I think, I wonder if they'd be similar to a roadrunner.
I think roadrunners are a bit bigger than killdeer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And there's usually
wily coyotes with them, too. No.
And Acme kits.
Yes.
A big box.
Right, yeah.
with a little bomb on the side. Yeah, I love that. Oh, my gosh, that's funny. All righty. So, as far as focus goes, it's so much more than just training a specific look at me skill, but I think that this is an important thing to talk about as well. I want to talk a little bit about teaching a solicited attention command. So basically that means saying to the dog, I want you to look at me, and the dog saying, yep, okay, I'm going to look at you.
Right.
So is this something you teach with your dogs?
I do. Yeah. I do. I either call it look at me or watch me.
Okay. And how do you teach it?
Well, I start off by luring it with food.
Okay.
So when the puppies are very young, I have the treat go right down to their little nostrils. And I draw the treat up to my face and the puppy looks up naturally because they're following the treat. And when they're looking up at me, I say yes and bring the treat straight back down to their mouth.
Perfect.
So once the puppy's got that look, I will add either look at me or watch me in to put it on cue. And the puppy has learned to looking up at me bring something good.
Excellent.
I do, once they've achieved that, I also try to capture it too. So if I'm, you know, sitting doing something and suddenly I notice my dog is staring intently at me, I'll say yes, bring the treat to my eyes and then down to their mouth. So I'm going to capture the moments when they are giving me attention.
Yeah. And I love that you reinforced bringing the food from your face down to theirs. Mm-hmm. And I actually, we joke a lot about baby birding. We call it baby birding, which is actually tucking the food in your mouth as a pocket and then either spitting it to the dog.
That's such a nice way to call it. Back in the olden days, we called that just plain old food spitting.
Food
now
spitting
it's
for
baby
the win.
Birding.
Baby birding. I know. I decided it was a much nicer moniker.
That is nicer. That is nicer. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So you can either spit it as a mama bird would do for their baby bird.
Regurgitate.
And I try not to regurgitate it first. Wah. So I guess it's not really baby birding, but.
And you don't chew it for them, do you?
Sometimes, but then it usually ends up getting swallowed.
Right.
Or you can take it directly from your mouth and deliver it to the dog. And the reason that this is powerful is that the dog now knows the food source is your mouth.
Right.
So, of course, your mouth is on your face, and that gives them extra incentive to look up towards your face. And I use this technique a lot to get attention on my face. I think it's so important that a lot of the times, because we are wearing bait pouches or we have a big hunk of food in our pocket or a big pocket full of food, a lot of the times we fall for that bad habit of bringing the food out of our pocket and delivering it straight to our dogs. And then what do we get?
We get a dog that looks at our pocket or our bait pouch or our hand motions. Yeah. They're very glued to our hand moving.
Yeah, exactly. Dogs are masters of body language. So if they think that there is food attached to this pocket or food attached to the hand going to that pocket, that's where their focus is going to be. And that's an innocent thing on their part, because if we're bringing the food from our pocket and delivering it straight to them, we end up saying the value comes from my pocket. Whereas if I bring the food, either bring the food up to my face or do that baby birding trick, then the food comes from my face. And that can really reinforce things for the dog.
Exactly, yes.
I love that you mentioned capturing it. So looking for natural opportunities to say, oh, I like that you're looking at my face. Right. I think that's brilliant. And I actually take that so many steps further through my dog's lives because we do a lot of off-leash everywhere. You know, anywhere that we can be off-leash in the bush. Now I have my own property that we spend a lot of time on. But, you know, for up until September, I relied on the city.
You were a city girl.
Yeah. So I would find spaces that I could get off road and use those spaces to have nice off leash hikes with my dogs. And I want my dogs to be thinking about me when they're off leash.
Right.
So yes, I expect them to respond to their name. I expect them to respond to the recall. I expect them to generally be present and accountable to to me when I call them or do something. You know, sometimes I just say, get in. If we're, you know, if we see another person on the path, I'll say, get in, tuck them into heel position, and then we'll pass the other person. And then I'll say, okay, and release them from heel position at that point.
But and that's taken you a long time to get there too. That doesn't. Yeah. You just don't, just doesn't happen.
No, this is all trained behaviors.
Yes.
But the one thing that I do on trails a lot with my dogs is look for that voluntary attention or look for that check-in moment. Right. And because I've done what you've done and I've said, oh, I like that you're looking at me and said yes and rewarded just randomly when I see them looking at me, my dogs often get to the point where they're like, oh, what are you doing back there? And when they do that, when we're out and about,
right?
You know, I start off on long lines so that I can control the scenario. I can back myself up, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, eventually I want to get them to the point where they're off leash. So when we're at the long line stage, I'm looking for that dog to occasionally go, hey, what are you doing back there? And look back to me or look forward to me or whatever the case may be. I want my dog to check in with me.
Yes.
And when they do, I acknowledge that.
Right. Yes.
I say, oh, you're so smart. Here's a cookie.
Right.
That's always part of my training efforts when I have a young dog is to reward that check-in. Mm-hmm. Because then now, I mean, it's the funniest thing because we're on our own property now, but it's very, you've been there. Mm-hmm. So you've seen that it's very path-like. Right, yes. There's lots of trails that I've cut through and that were cut through before I moved in. And so Ned can get out of sight very, very quickly. And I rely on the fact that he knows that when he's out of sight, he stops and he waits for me.
Right.
So it's funny because I'll come around the corner and there he'll be sitting watching for me to come. And, you know, he's at the point now where at almost seven, he's not getting food every time this happens.
Right.
He's rarely ever getting food when this happens. Every once in a while, I make sure that I, you know, I acknowledge it with some sort of food reward or, you know, I might pick up a stick and give it a toss for him. That's incredibly rewarding for him. If it's snowing, I would pick up a snowball and say, yay, you're the smartest dog and throw that for him. It's like one of the best rewards. He loves it. So I would look for opportunities to say, I still love that you do that.
Right.
And I want you to keep doing that. Because dogs do what's rewarding.
Yep.
So if we make focus on us rewarding, dogs are going to give us focus.
Right.
If we make focus on the other dogs on the street more rewarding, that's what they're going to focus on.
Right. Yep.
And we do this to ourselves, unfortunately, by letting our dogs go and greet strange dogs on the street, play with every dog they meet and doing things like daycare and dog parks where they get to be hyper social all the time and they get super overstimulated at just the sight of other dogs. So this is another way to get good focus is to make sure that the things that are valuable to your dog aren't the external factors.
Right.
You know, little bits of play with other dogs is one thing. Little bits of play with dogs that you know are safe, that your dog knows, et cetera, not a big deal.
Right.
But massive amounts of nonstop play or play where they get to play with every single dog out there or every single person out there.
Right. Yep.
You know, this puts a lot of value on the external factors,
right, yes.
on the self-reward, right. on the self-soothing behaviors, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't put the reinforcement on focusing on you.
Right.
So it actually makes focusing on you aversive mm-hmm. because they want to focus on that other dog because that's yep. what they've learned.
And you're the hindrance.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
the hindrance holding them back.
Exactly. So think about what your we did an episode that was great. What is your dog actually learning to do in those moments?
Right.
It was several episodes ago, but I thought it was a great one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is the message the dog is getting?
Right.
And if
yes.
the message that the dog is getting is that the external world is the most fun thing ever and paying attention to you is a downer when it comes to that external mm-hmm. world, you need to flip that script.
Right. Yes.
You know, like, yes, the external world needs to be part of their lives. They need to interact mm-hmm. with that world. They need to do sniffs.
Right.
They need to do all these things. But it should really be controlled and it should really be on your say
right.
so that they're safe. You know, I mean, the amount of dogs these days picking up marijuana.
Right.
You know, that just.
Yeah, it's legal. It's legal in Ontario here. So it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like in these situations, if my dog is used to just putting their head down and sniffing and grabbing whatever they want,
right.
I run those risks. Whereas if I have a nice casual heel in mm-hmm. the city, you know, my dog walks at my mm-hmm. side and doesn't pick up things off the sidewalk, then I can control that a little bit
exactly,
better. And when
yes.
I get to the park and I know that this is a safer area, you know, assuming that
right.
I know this is a safer area, then I can say, okay, go sniff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to worry that they're going to pick up something
right.
potentially
yes.
dangerous.
Yes. I don't like it when my dogs or when my dogs don't, but when I see other dogs that are constantly scoping the ground,
yeah.
like they're constantly just scoping the ground. What's out there? What can I grab? Because you run the risk of them picking up something they
Absolutely.
Shouldn't in the real world. You know, in the dog training hall, it's going to be dog treats, but
yeah.
in the real world, it, you know, there's all kind. You hear of people poisoning dogs. There's just gross things out there you don't
yeah.
want in your dog's mouth. There was a mouse head the other day when Honda.
Just the
and
head?
I, just the head.
Oh, that must have been a cat, I wonder, eh?
It was severed
Ooh.
So well, I wondered if it was a mouse trap and
oh.
somebody, it had fallen out of the garbage or something. Because
oh,
it was
okay.
a perfect little mouse head. I could have taxidermied it on my wall. But the last thing I would have wanted was for Honda to grab a mouse head.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bit it.
And Honda just kind of glanced down at it and went, I'm not allowed to pick up things on the ground ever, so.
If you're looking for help getting better focus with your dog, check out our online training program. Our online life skills program is something that is going to help you teach your dog how to focus and listen despite all of the distractions that might be out there in the world. We hope to see you in our online life skills program. Come on and work with myself and the rest of the McCann Dogs instructors where we'll support you through your training journey. If you're sitting listening to this right now and you're wondering, that's my dog, how do I stop it? I can't stop it. You know, you need to take the walk out of the situation, revisit training, mm-hmm. train it from where we talked about at the beginning of the episode. You know, go into the weight room, make it valuable for the dog, do some work there. And again, this shouldn't be a long period of time. It's basically just to set the stage and help the dog get some success. And then you're going to start adding color into the room before you go back out there on the walk. What happens at that point is the dog has rehearsed the wrong behavior. So that has become habit. So now you have to override that habit and instill new habits. So it's going to take some time
mm-hmm.
and accept that right from the beginning.
Yes.
You know, I would put a mark 6 weeks down further on the calendar and say, okay, that's my goal time. It's going to take an average of 6 weeks to change a habit. I've got 6 weeks to teach this walking skill. I'm going to start in my, you know, in the living room mm-hmm. or in the kitchen. And that's week one. And then week two, we're going to start working on the front lawn and we're going to start working on the backyard. And these are very arbitrary amounts of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to do what's right for the dog. So it might be after 2 days and it might be after 2 weeks that you move out of the white room.
Right.
It's probably not too long to stay mm-hmm. in the white room for 2 weeks. It should be just the introduction of things and then start to slowly add the color.
Right. Yes.
Right? And that color might just be, sorry, that color might just be throwing a toy into the room. So now I'm doing my healing work with a toy there.
Right. Right.
So sorry.
And
what were you gonna say?
I just think of it too, is say your dog's a year or two old now and you're struggling. Your dog's going to be around possibly for another 12 to 13 years. And taking 1 year of your life and really training and working
yeah.
hard on that dog is going to give you the next 12 years of wonderfulness.
Yes.
Or you can spend the next 12 years battling your dog, or worse, your dog now can't be included in things and
yes.
it's regulated to the yard. So, you know what? Take the time. It's like when our children are born. You know, we only have them really for 18 years and then they're gone. You know, 18 years out of a, you know, 80, 90 year life's not a long time
no,
to spend with
not.
Your children. Same with your dog. Like, take a year or two to train them.
Yeah, and think about that. They're doing all of that learning and getting into adolescence and whatnot. It takes 18 years in a human life. Mm-hmm. You know, spend the equivalent, not 18 years, but the equivalent, if you put it in a relative term, with a dog's life, mm-hmm. spend that same amount of time on learning, and then you will have the rest of their lives to enjoy them.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
If you do it right from the beginning, you're going to get great focus. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about, we've sort of talked about this a little bit, but I want to talk about teaching mm-hmm. voluntary attention. Right. So we talked about capturing it yep. when it occurs naturally, mm-hmm. but I like to set the stage in my favor.
Oh, right. Yep.
So
yep.
I want to make sure that my dog learns how to do these things. So I set them up in my training situation. Mm-hmm. So do you ever do that with voluntary attention?
Like rule outs and things like that?
Yeah, things like that. But, right? but really more the actual attention piece. So rule outs to me are about emotional control, right? Seeing something that you want, watching that thing that you want, but knowing that you can't have that thing until it's given to you or you're told, you can release to it. Voluntary attention for me is, you know, there might be a thing that you want. In order to get that thing that you need to look at me first, not just you need to ignore that mm-hmm. thing. So for me with voluntary attention, I set this up right away. As soon as I've taught solicited attention, mm-hmm. and as soon as my dog sort of can identify that sitting in control position mm-hmm. means they should be engaged with me, so chances are they're going to be focused on me or looking up at me. Mm-hmm. So I will take this scenario. Right. I'll do a sit placement at my side or again and have my dog sitting beside me in what we call control position. Mm-hmm. And I'll take something relatively benign. So it might be an empty Kleenex box. Mm-hmm. It might be an empty Kong. We have an attention workshop on our online training site that I talk about voluntary attention, and I use an empty Kong mm-hmm. on the last lesson of that workshop. So basically, with my dog sitting in control position, I take that Kong and I place it out on the ground, probably about 5 feet from mm-hmm. me, you know? So it's not super close. It's not super distracting. You know, Kongs are, Ned likes mm-hmm. a Kong, but he's not like mad about a Kong. Right. It's not a tennis ball. I wouldn't start with a tennis ball mm-hmm. because tennis ball, magical orb of joy, sun shines out of it, right? It's the best thing in the world for some reason. So I wouldn't start there. Yeah. I would expect that eventually, mm-hmm. but I would start with something a little bit less exciting. So it might be an empty Kleenex box. Mm-hmm. In the attention workshop that you can pick up on our online site, it is a Kong that I use. And basically I put that Kong about 5 or 6 feet away mm-hmm. from me, and I just step into control position with Ned, and I just wait until he goes, "What are we doing?" Mm-hmm. And he looks up at me. "What are we doing? How come we're just sitting here? Uh-huh. There's a Kong out there. How come we're just sitting here?" And that moment when his eyes meet mine and you see the heart start to come out of my head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That moment where his eyes meet mine, I say yes, and I reward him. Mm. And he goes, "Oh, who cares about that empty Kleenex box or that Kong?
Right.
This is paying off. This is great. So then I set it up again. Maybe I will give the Kong a little kick. So he's like, "Oh, how come that Kong's moving?" And then I step back into control mm-hmm. position. And he goes, "Oh, there you are again." And he looks up at me because he knows now that, you know, the Kong's not that exciting. I got cookies here from Mom. Well, and again, I yes and reward.
Well, why don't I often look at you during the day and I don't get a $20 bill?
I'm going to throw like really, really delicious candy.
Candies. Every time I look at you. Yes, that would be good. I know.
I'll have jelly beans.
I would pay lots of attention.
Do you like the Jelly Belly jelly beans?
I do like the Jelly Belly, but I don't like the buttered popcorn flavor.
Oh my
gosh. I
don't
like that one. That's gross. So
it is funny to eat it, but it blows my mind every time I eat it. I know. That one and the juicy pear.
Juicy pear is
because
good.
Because it tastes exactly like a pear.
Right.
They're jelly belly people. They are wizards.
Yeah, they are.
I can only imagine like the laboratory and the mad scientists coming up with these flavors.
Actually, I think we should probably go on a tour.
Yeah, we should probably come up with some flavors.
If there's anyone from the Jelly Belly factory, please invite us for a tour.
We would love to go. Yes. Yeah. Send jelly beans. No, I'm totally kidding.
No jelly beans. Oh, and another thing I like to think about with focus too is you want to be worthy of your dog's focus.
Yes.
So you want to present an image that your dog says, "You know what? You're a confident leader and I want to follow you."
Yeah.
If I'm constantly bribing and pleading for my dog's attention, that just like for people, that's a turnoff.
Yeah.
That's a turnoff.
Absolutely.
And it's a turnoff for your dog too. So you want to present yourself and have a presence that your dog says, "Oh, like this person does good things and I want to be with them and I want to follow them."
So what do you think has gone wrong if somebody is begging and pleading with their dog?
I think the dog has no value for them. The dog has value everywhere else but for the owner.
Yeah. So, and how did that come to be? You know, like, did you do the homework? Have you built value in that white room first? Does the dog have, in this immediate situation, a distraction that is overfacing them? So now they're rehearsing not being willing or able to focus, and you're begging.
Right.
You know, those situations, they're not good for anybody.
Right. And so it probably started off right away where, as a puppy, you gave the puppy too much freedom. Mm-hmm. Possibly the puppy cried in its crate and you felt bad and took the puppy out. You called the puppy's name and the puppy was allowed to ignore you and just continue on its merry way.
Yeah.
So you've done things to show your puppy already that he doesn't need to pay attention. Yeah.
And here's the thing. It's not about being rough. About saying you must, but it's about being consistent.
Yes.
You know, and that's really what makes training an all the time thing, mm-hmm. because our dogs are always learning. So if I'm not in quote unquote training mode where I've got my bait pouch strapped on and I'm ready to go to mm-hmm. work and my dog blows me off and I go, oh, well, we're not really training. I'll fix it when we're training.
And people make excuses.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, we couldn't do that today because a bird flew by the window or, you know, or he just didn't really, you know, he didn't like that.
Yeah.
You know, like no excuses. Nope. Like when you see like an old farmer with a working sheepdog and the border collie's out there working, like, he's not making excuses for his dog. He's just leading the dog.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that really is essentially dog training. Show them what you need them to do. Mm-hmm. Make them be accountable to mm-hmm. those things. You know, if I call my dog's name, it doesn't matter what time of the day it is. If I call my dog's name and they don't immediately turn, I'm doing something to make sure that they recognize, hey, mm-hmm. you know what? That name, that word, that's important.
Right.
You need to respond when you hear that name. So whatever mm-hmm. that thing is, it's going to be every single time.
Right.
And then eventually my dog goes, okay, I can't ignore that thing.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and we built value. Mm-hmm. Like it's this solution that mm-hmm. comes from many different angles mm-hmm. because we built value for the thing. Now we're saying, hey, there's no option. We're making sure that the dog understands
right.
how to do this thing, that it's worth their while and that they have to.
Right. Exactly.
And if my dog understands that they have to respond to my voice in this mm-hmm. scenario,
right.
it's going to make other scenarios mm-hmm. much easier. So right. yeah, it may be my living room and there may be nothing to worry about in my living room, but it doesn't matter. If I've said Ned and he's sniffing at the corner and he ignores that,
right.
I'm getting up off the couch.
Yep.
I'm going to
exactly.
him and I'm making
yes.
it happen.
Yes.
And that ensures that when I call him to come and he's running towards the road, mm-hmm. he doesn't think, you know what? I didn't have to listen. I didn't have to be accountable there. I didn't have to be accountable right. there. I don't have to be accountable here either. I'm going to keep chasing the squirrel.
Right.
Yep. You know, that consistent ability to focus, right. ability yes. to listen, ability to turn mm-hmm. off distractions and respond to the commands that right. we've taught.
And then the addressing yes. it too. I remember when I was a little girl, one of my parents' boxers, Josh, was very nosy.
Okay.
And my dad was in an obedience trial in a high school gym. And there was all the basketball stripes or markings on the floor. And Josh was distracted by them.
Okay.
And he'd never seen all these stripes on the floor. I don't know what he thought they were, but he left my dad on the healing exercise and just started sniffing all the stripes and sniffing around.
Oh.
And so my dad failed. And instead of my dad saying, oh, he was distracted by the stripes and making all these excuses about the stripes, my dad said, I need to practice with stripes on the floor. So I remember my dad, we went to our church gym.
Okay.
And it had stripes on it. And my dad, I remember like being a little girl and, you know, sitting, you know, coloring in that. And my dad was working that dog in that gymnasium so that the next time there were stripes all over the floor, the dog could do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, no excuses.
Absolutely.
Let's tackle this distraction.
Absolutely. And just like going back to your recall story at the near the beginning of mm-hmm. this episode with Gavin.
Right.
Like that is what we do as dog trainers. We see a hole and we know we have to fill it or it's just going to get bigger.
Yep.
It's never going to solve itself.
It's messy in between.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of messy dog training. Yes.
Woo-hoo.
Like we're in the trenches.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't expect it to be perfect because it is probably at some point it might be a little ugly. You know, at some point you might be sweating and your dog might be out at the end of the leash making a silly of themselves.
Right. Yep.
That was good censoring.
Mm, yeah. Silly.
You know, there's gotta be something to do with that scenario that you help the dog understand what they should be doing instead. And, you know, it may not be. So if I'm in an environment where the dog is so overfaced that there's no way they're going to be able to learn in that situation, then I need to take it out of that situation. Mm-hmm. But I need to work back up to that situation.
Right.
So I never want to say, oh, that's too tough of a distraction. That's how we end up falling for the idea that dogs don't have to listen.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they are fully capable of, and they definitely can listen. Mm-hmm. Like there's
under any distraction.
Yes. Absolutely. There's no reason why not if you put in the training and the time, you know?
Right.
And this is the part that often fails us is we have these holes and then instead of filling them, we just go, oh, you know what? I don't know what to do. So I'm just not going to do anything.
Right.
And either the dog ends up rehearsing the same thing over and over and over again, or they end up being relegated to a leash.
Exactly.
And
yes.
Losing their freedom.
And the owner goes around telling everyone their dog is stubborn.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's not stubborn. It's just you didn't approach the train. You didn't face it. You didn't face your problem.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you let the problem become bigger than you instead of saying, okay, this is a problem I need to solve.
Right.
How do I solve it?
Yes.
Somebody, I don't have the answers. Somebody help me with the answers to solve this thing. Mm-hmm. There's going to be someone to help you with this problem. You know, us or somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, there's absolutely answers and solutions.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's changing the people's habits.
Exactly.
The dogs actually are easy to change. It's changing people's habits.
Yeah.
People are so set in their ways and they don't want to do the things. You need to adapt to your dog.
Yeah.
Your dog deserves that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to reach into the McCann toolbox.
The wondrous question box.
I almost said question and answer box, but it's just questions.
There should be answers in there too.
The next one should be an answer.
The next time they're answers and we ask the question.
Okay, so this question is going to be right in line with what we were just chatting about. My dog is dog reactive, and when she gets triggered, nothing works. She even redirects on me by nipping my heels. So I'm going to say if you have a reactive dog, look at the environment and the situation that's happening and see what you can adjust to help bring the energy down and help with some of the drives that your dog is experiencing in that moment. I would say if you have a dog that redirects on you by nipping at you, I would not try to tackle this as a solo problem, and I would not turn to the armchair experts on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I would seek out professional help right away if a dog was redirecting on me, even just in a nipping behavior. In all likelihood, the nipping at heels is more related to a herding behavior than it is to an actual aggression problem, but that's just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse unless it is addressed specifically. And anytime there's any sort of aggression, it is always best to work with a professional.
Yes.
You know, the running joke around McCann's when we talk about the armchair experts everywhere in the world, everybody who's had a dog who's maybe, you know, experienced a little bit of issue with that dog thinks that they have the singular solution for everybody else's problems. And as professional dog trainers, we know that any problem that is presented by a dog may have multiple solutions, may have multiple different solutions or multiple combined solutions to get there. So we always joke that having teeth doesn't make you a dentist any more than having dogs makes you able to assess how to deal with a dog behavior problem.
Right.
Training is different. Mm-hmm. You know, training is very step by step, and we can think outside the box, and we have the luxury of that time.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a behavioral issue where something is going wrong, where there is any sort of aggression happening, where there is any sort of real fear happening, this is something that you don't have that luxury.
Right.
You know, you really need to get solid answers, and guessing at things is going to cause you and the dog so much more stress that it potentially could make the problem a lot worse for you both.
Right.
So that is my best advice. If you are dealing with any sort of behavioral aggression issue, seek out the advice of a professional. Do not try to DIY that.
Right. Exactly. I have the next question.
Oh, it's a big one.
It's a biggie.
Biggie.
What if you need your dog to walk on a leash just to get from point A to point B, even when they are very young, because you don't own a car? You can't turn every feet. You can't turn every few feet. You need to walk into the perfect and patient training session.
Okay. You want me to help or?
No, I'm just comprehending it. Just comprehending it now.
Gotcha.
Yes, yes. Well, if you have to get places with your puppy.
Yeah, of
so
course.
So when a puppy's a little tiny puppy, I just carry them.
Mm-hmm.
So I carry them along. That way they're not sniffing something they shouldn't. They're not, you know, pulling on the leash. Mm-hmm. I'll use, if it's a bigger puppy, then I'll use food or a toy. Yeah. And I'll have that in front of their nose and lure them along to help them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't turn every few feet when you need to walk. Right. So yeah, I think so they're saying about changing direction, turning away from distractions. Right? Yeah. From distractions. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm going to try my best that I'm more fun than any of the distractions. Then I'm going to really use food. I'm going to be extremely aware of my environment.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick up the puppy. Anything you would add?
Yeah. So here's the thing. When you actually have to get somewhere, that is not the right time to be considering these things, right? When you actually, so say for example, you live in an apartment and I need to get from my apartment on the 9th floor outside with my puppy to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I need to do that. My puppy needs to pee.
Right.
So in that scenario, I am going to do what I need to do to get by. And hopefully that doesn't rehearse the wrong behavior.
Right.
So I am going to use food, use a toy, carry my puppy if I can. Mm-hmm. You know, if I don't have a St. Bernard size puppy, I'm definitely going to carry my puppy initially up in arms and then get to the potty spot, put them down at that point, worry about the leash manners once they've gone pee. But here's the thing. If the only time that I ever walk that route is when my puppy has to go to the bathroom, I'm rehearsing the same situation over and over again. Mm-hmm. And that situation is the get out of jail free situation, right? It shouldn't be the all the time situation. Mm-hmm. This should be the situation where, okay, my puppy's got to go to the bathroom, so I've got to run them out.
Right.
The rest of the time, I'm going to be working on those walking skills.
Exactly, you know? Yes.
So now my puppy's peed. They've gone from point A to point B where they had to get there. Mm-hmm. We had to get there together. They've gone, they've done their business. Now I don't have to get back. Right. Or if I do have to get back, I'm going to make sure that I set up some other scenarios where I'm walking that route without the worry of having to get to the point B part.
Right, yes.
And I'm going to be practicing my walking in that scenario and building value and helping my puppy understand. And then I can turn.
Right.
You know, if I need to turn and change direction, I can turn. If I need to stop and work a sit placement and get my puppy's little brain back under control, I can do that. I'm not in this big rush. You know, I'm not late for the appointment to get to the potty spot.
Right.
I have the time.
Yes.
And I have the time to help my puppy with those lessons and understanding.
And you're not going to allow your puppy to go to the distractions.
Yeah.
So, you know, another person's coming down the street with their puppy. Can my puppy greet your puppy? You're going to say, nope, I'm not creating any expectations other than you hang out with me.
Yeah.
Or a person wants to pat your puppy. You know, maybe I'll pick my puppy up and then give them a quick pat. But in most circumstances, I'm going to say, no, we're in training. I can't do that right now. So I want my puppy to be able to ignore distractions because there's no expectations with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is like, that's such an important part of things because if we live our lives worrying about what everybody else wants from our puppy, we are going to end up sacrificing what we want for our puppy.
Yes.
So I learned this lesson all the way along my entire dog owning life, you know, so from 1999 until today, I have been working solidly on not worrying about being rude to people. Initially, it was a really hard thing for me. And anytime somebody saw my dog and was like, oh, can my dog say hello? Or can I say hello? It was a nightmare scenario for me to be able to be like, oh, you know what? No. And there were times where I'll admit, I thought, you know, I don't want to be rude. I'll just let this happen and then move on from it later. This is in really early days. But stuff like that set me back.
Yeah.
Right. So letting that happen with Jaden, for example, knowing that him staring, like being excited about seeing the other dog and then giving in to letting him see the other dog made my life that much more difficult for several months after that was a great life lesson for me. And now I don't worry about being rude. And not that I am rude. I'm intentionally polite. However, I'm also on my own mission and I keep telling myself, they don't have to live with the dog that's going to be jumping up on them.
Right.
They don't have to live with the dog that's going to be wild about every dog that it sees. They don't have to live with that dog. I have to live with that dog.
Right.
They don't have to experience the stress of the rules changing mid-game.
Right.
My dog has to experience that, right? So if my dog thinks it's okay to go and visit every other dog and then I suddenly take that away and stop that from happening, that's stressful for my dog because the rules have changed and it seems odd and unfair and what he wants to rehearse because what he's been rehearsing is going to visit the other dog and he's not allowed. That's stressful.
Right.
I owe my dog far more than that. I don't owe that stranger anything.
No.
You know, that stranger may be the nicest person in the world. I'm going to say, I'm sorry, my puppy's in training. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to keep walking.
Right.
I do not worry about being rude anymore. Yeah. Not that I go out of my way to be rude, but I don't engage.
Right.
I try my best to make it obvious that I don't wish to engage.
Right.
I'm focused on my puppy and we're, you know, doing training. And sometimes I'm overly vocal to say, oh, we're going to ignore that big distraction. Good for you. So it gives a hint to the other person. If they say, oh, my puppy wants to come and say hi, or if they have a dog that I can see is clearly not under good control.
Right.
And, you know, we hear these stories all the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, they were lunging at the end of the leash and then the leash pulled out of the owner's hands and all of a sudden this dog was on top of me. It happened this week in the group that one of our students, they got chased by an off-leash dog and they ended up falling down on the road and it could have been much worse.
And we did have one of our students get hit by a car too. Well, not the student, the dog.
Oh, that's horrible.
On a greeting, remember it got loose?
Oh my God. That's horrible. Oh. So yeah, I mean, these scenarios are not good and you want the dog to learn to ignore. So
what I do is I don't make eye contact with people.
Yeah,
I find I just don't even look at people. So if I'm walking and I feel there's people approaching, I can see them. So I look down at my dog and start engaging and rewarding and talking to my dog. And I don't make eye contact.
Good call.
I find that it's when you make eye contact with the people that that's when they often will speak.
Yeah.
But if you ignore them, they usually don't talk to you.
Yeah. So if I see that person approaching with the dog that's out of control, I will immediately seek refuge. So I'll walk up a driveway to the top of someone's driveway. I don't mind being on someone's property. If they say to me, hey, get off my property, I will in a second. I'm just waiting for this dog to pass. You know what? If you're really that upset about it, okay, we're going to get off your property. But like, I've never been questioned.
Yes. I've gone on people's lawns and driveways.
Yeah. Or anything like that or setting up shop.
I had to hide up on a person's porch once from a loose dog.
Oh dear.
When I was walking one of my melon was suddenly there was a loose Rottweiler and it came charging towards us from away from a distance. So I didn't know where to go. So I went up on like a covered porch.
Okay.
And with like a solid wall around it. And I first knocked on the person's door, but there was no answer. And I thought, and I saw the Rottweiler. It didn't know where we had went and I could see it air scenting. And then it saw me standing on the porch, but it couldn't see Saber because she was on the porch and it was kind of covered.
Okay.
And I remember I just kind of looked at the turned sideways and didn't engage with the dog at all. And it eventually just kept air sniffing and walked on.
Off it went.
And, but yeah, I went right up on that person's porch and knocked on the door because I thought there might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. This doesn't look good. So don't be afraid to.
Yeah.
To just, you know, do whatever you need to do.
Yeah. If you need to go in, make yourself a snack, you know, we, your full blessing. No, I'm
right. Yeah. I would even go, if I was in a dire situation, I would go in someone's yard.
Yeah.
And just hope they didn't have an even worse dog there. Yeah, but
for sure.
Right. Yeah.
The other line that I like to use, if someone's like, oh, my dog's friendly, I basically will just right away say, oh, sorry, mine's just getting over kennel cough.
That works well.
That will keep people's dogs at bay faster than my dog doesn't like other dogs.
Right.
My dog doesn't like to play.
Right.
No, sorry, we're in training. Nothing works as well as the fear of kennel cough.
Oh, so that's a good one.
Then,
yes.
And then as they walk away, I sound like that angry squirrel in the tree. I'm like,
or give a few coughs as they walk by.
Yeah.
Ned, are you okay?
Oh, Ned, you poor coffee guy.
Let's get you home for some cough syrup.
Yeah. You know, it's just not worth to me.
Right.
It's not worth the message that the dog gets to visit a dog on the street. Mm-hmm. And it's not worth the risk.
Right.
We're constantly helping people defuse their dogs from situations that have gone awry by trusting other dogs that they don't know. So it's just not worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Let's do one more question. One more question here. Whew. How do you establish trust with your puppy not running off if frightened by something or a distraction? I'm afraid of her getting into trouble if she doesn't follow the recall. Thanks. So, I mean, this is a lot of training for a dog to override a fear response of something and listen to you instead. That dog needs to have solid understanding of skills.
Right.
And I would say there is nothing better in this scenario than starting right from day one. You know, you bring that puppy home at 8 weeks, you can start practicing skills with them. You can start teaching them things like their name, start teaching them things like the recall, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Get into a program. If you need direction, I would say if you haven't trained a dog before, or if you aren't an overly focused person and able to stick to sort of self-starting.
Right.
You probably need to be in an obedience program. Mm-hmm. If you have any questions about obedience, you need to have guidance. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't something that you're supposed to know. Lots of people come and they're like, I have no idea how to fix this. Well, you're not supposed to.
Right.
How would you? You're human.
Right. Exactly. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the times it's the same feeling, I'm sure, with new mothers and new fathers.
Right.
I have no idea how to do this. Right. Like, how am I still alive at this point? What did my parents do?
I remember when they sent me home with Ty from the hospital. It's like, I don't know how to look after him.
I
remember coming home and I had that book, What to Expect When You're Expecting, and then like What to Expect the First 3 Years or something.
Yeah.
And they were my Bibles.
Yeah.
Like anytime something happened, I'd look it up. Okay, what do I do? What do I do? And then you asked other mothers for advice and I asked my mom for advice. But as a new mom, I just didn't know what to do.
I bet. I wouldn't have a clue.
No.
I think I know how to change a diaper, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's kind of like you stand. I didn't even know. I remember the first time I tried to put a cloth diaper on a tie, I pinned it all on, and I was terrified putting the pins in. And, of course, I picked them up, and it slipped right off because it was way too loose.
I bet.
Yeah, or just trying to get the clothes on them. You have to move their arms, and it's hard. Bathing them the first time.
The learning curve is steep.
So we understand with dog training.
Absolutely.
It's a skill.
Well, and the best part is that most of us started exactly in that same space.
Right.
You know, I got my first dog in 99 mm-hmm. in college, my first year of college, and I didn't know what to do. I mean, my mother had scars all the way up her arms all her life from this Rottweiler puppy. She was a great dog, but she was a lot of dog and she was a force to reckon with and it was a steep learning curve.
Right, yes.
But luckily we had good guidance at McCann's and we got all the problems as they cropped up. You know, I'd just get one problem solved with her and then there'd be another problem because of course development is what it is and they're changing and growing mm-hmm. and I would just get one problem solved and now this is going on. How do I fix this now? But I would get answers. So it was all good.
And with a fearful dog, too, I had a fearful dog. And if I was out somewhere and I thought maybe I'd like to have her off leash, I actually had a long line dragging from her.
Yeah, good call.
Because she's fearful. I don't know what is going to happen in the world. There could be suddenly a huge bang. A car could backfire. Someone could light off a firecracker and she could bolt. So if I wasn't 100% sure, then she was dragging a long line.
Good call. Yep. And that really is the most important thing is physical control. If you have a dog that you are not, if you have a dog that you do not trust 100% is going to listen to your voice when they're off leash, they should not be off leash.
Right.
You know, you have more work to do. It's not that you can't get to the point where they're off leash. Every dog is capable of this, you know, with the right training and the right information and the right problem solving, every dog is capable of being off leash and having a great recall. But if you haven't put in the work, you need to question whether or not this is actually a good idea.
Are they ready?
Before you take off that leash. Mm-hmm. And I would say that's doubly important with a fearful dog, even a really well-trained, fearful dog.
Right.
You know, if they get spooked and run off and you aren't able to call them back, then, I mean, that's a really awful situation for a fearful dog. And they end up going feral so quickly.
They do. Fearful dogs do. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It's a scary thing.
So with a fearful dog, you want to teach the dog that you are the safe spot. Run to you. That's where safety is.
Yeah.
So, and that requires professional help. So.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Hey, Swanee.
Yeah.
We probably could have made this episode a lot shorter just by saying, how do you get better focus?
How?
Train your dog.
Yes, that's
I'm Instructor Shannon.
Instructor Swanee.
Happy training.
The McCann Dogs Podcast is brought to you by McCann Professional Dog Trainers. We help dog owners to have a well-behaved, four-legged family member. Please give us a call at 905-659-1888. Or visit us at McCannDogs.com. Happy training!